Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Griefsters, welcome back. This is the start of season 5, which is an incredible sentence. I never thought we'd get here, but here we are. We are only here thanks to you listening and tweeting and emailing, spreading the word about Griefcast. I want to start by just saying thank you so much to all of you for listening. It is genuinely so appreciated. I know I say that a lot, but if you're new, you might not have heard that. So thank you so, so much for being a part of the Griefster family. I hope you're having an okay week. That's what I say every week. I hope that the back to school feeling is doing you okay. Sometimes autumn can be tricky, or the turning of the seasons, as we say, can be hard. So I'm sending all of you lots of love and hope that today is okay, as these things can be. This week, I'm joined by a woman who almost needs no introduction. You've definitely heard of her, or you've definitely heard her doing all sorts of things on the radio and on television. It is the fabulous Edith Bowman. Edith has been on Radio 1 and Radio 6, and she's hosted Glastonbury, and she's hosted all sorts of things. She's just generally a brilliant, brilliant person, and she's one of those people that every time you mention her, people go, oh, I love her, and that's because she's such a lovely, wonderful person. She also has her own podcast, Soundtracking, which I cannot recommend enough if you are into film and music, particularly, even if you're not, where she interviews people about the music in their films, and it's just really interesting and definitely worth a listen. Edith came in to talk to me about her granddad Bowman. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with broadcaster and podcaster Edith Bowman. Hello.
Hi.
Edith, I do want to talk about podcasters initially, obviously, because this is a podcast. People will know you anyway from all your amazing broadcast work.
Yeah.
But you've had such phenomenal success with Soundtracking.
Yeah, it's been amazing, actually.
Yeah.
And it came out of sheer frustration.
I was going to ask you, so it wasn't... Yeah, how did it come about?
So I was doing a show on... I got asked to go and do a show on Six Music with Adam Buxton, King of Podcasts.
King of Podcasts.
And we were only ever supposed to do 6 shows together to kind of fill a slot. And we ended up doing 6 months. And then Adam had to go off because he had all these bugs planned and stuff. And he had a lot of stuff coming up. So he was like, I can't commit to anymore. So then I got to do the show on my own for a bit. And it was kind of... open-ended in terms of this might last a month, it might last anyway. I ended up doing it for another 6 months, and then they were changing the slots around. But then what they did was they gave me this 1 hour slot sporadically.
Yeah.
So it was like,
that's quite hard.
Yeah, it's weird
for a job. Most people, I think, don't realize how Like, the that's quite unsettling.
The flesh of a freelance broadcaster. Yeah. It's terrifying and frustrating, but equally can be rewarding when you end up doing what I've ended up doing. And so myself and this guy, Ben, we kind of devised this sort of loose thing where we would speak to people in film and TV about music. But it had to be very contained and very specific because of Six Music's remit and their listeners and things. So, you know, they kind of gave me 3 shows in March and then 4 shows in October.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, guys, I could give you a show every week with this I do so much work in the film world that I could get you, we could get a guest every week. And they were like, we just don't have the slot. So I was like, can I swear?
Yeah.
Fuck it, I'm going to do it myself. So I did. It took a while to kind of work out how you do a podcast. And another Ben Walker, was really kind. He works with Dermot on Dermot's radio show and stuff. And so he helped me sort of set up the kind of framework and the, you know, the kind of boring businessy side of and how you actually set up podcasts. And then we approached people about coming on board. And the first ever interview that we recorded for it was with Jon Favreau.
Wow. That's a light first guest.
I know,
isn't it?
Yeah. But what was great was that he quite clearly from the start of the interview had never really been asked about music before.
I think that's obviously why you've hit that strange niche that podcasts hit, that music is sometimes so often overlooked with filmmakers, isn't it?
And so he kind of like, his little face lit up and he kind of just started spewing out all these great stories. And obviously he'd just done Jungle Book, which he'd kind of had to rework all these iconic pieces of music from the original. And so having him in the bag was like, brilliant. All right, now we can go to.
Yeah.
And so we actually had Ben Wheatley was our first ever episode. We're now on, this week's going to be episode 150.
Wow.
Yeah, we've missed 2 weeks since we launched August 2016 for that whole time. We've managed to put out an episode every week.
Because this was December 2016, or November 2016 we started, but we're on episode 88, I think. I've had lots of gaps. I had a baby 2 weeks after I launched it, which is not good business planning. I didn't really think about I wasn't like, hey, I'm launching. I was like, oh, I'm just going to put 4 episodes in SoundCloud and then forget about them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had no idea what it was going to be when we found that we had a very small audience to start with, but a really passionate one. And I just loved recording the interviews more than anything. You know, and it's just me and Ben that do it. I book all the guests. I take my little recorder and go and record the audio. I send it to him and he edits it. And he's a master when it comes to, you know, weaving in the little bits of music that we're allowed to play and stuff. But then we make a playlist on Spotify so that people can hear the tunes in their entirety.
Oh, that's cool.
In the order we play them and stuff. But we found really quickly that, like you say, there was people really wanted to talk about it. And what I love about the fact that we aren't tied to a radio station or whatever, or a traditional broadcaster, is that it means our goalposts can be very wide.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we're not restricted on who we talk to.
That's what it's like, exactly the same with this show. I always think I'd never pitched it to radio for, but if I had, I you would have got that. Okay, it needs to be 6 episodes. It needs to be this recognisable person. And
this length.
Yeah, and this length as well. And what I love is you get, obviously, it's great to talk to people who are well known, obviously, because that, you know, they have a larger reach and that story can be really spread. And that's lovely. But I just, when I think of the people whose stories we would have missed because they were, inverted commas, not well known enough, I think, God, that would be terrible if that person hadn't had a chance.
Totally.
Because that story was so, and so helpful and so useful, and so interesting. And
even that element and that side of things that you don't, they don't normally get a chance to talk about what they do. So we had a brilliant female music supervisor on called Sarah Bridge, who has worked on some brilliant things, Theory of Everything and that big Idris Elba series on Sky, Gorilla, and then lots of other little things. But it was we got an amazing response to that because people hadn't really heard what the role of a music supervisor is. And if you're a film fan, it's brilliant to, for me, because the reason I do it is because I'm so nosy and I love film and I love music. It's a bit of a kind of, I feel like I'm at school sometimes with the best lecturers in the world, just kind of telling me stories about what they do and their experiences. So that's what I love about it, just having a chat with people about things I'm into.
Yeah, well, it's hugely successful and you should definitely listen to it. But sadly, that is not why you're here in my room today, sadly, to talk about fun
music.
But
also, I mean, I think what you're doing as well is just, it's so needed, and it's such a healthy thing that you're doing,
I think, as well.
Just, you know, encouraging people that it shouldn't be something that's brushed under the carpet. And by my mum has a great phrase, which is better out than in.
Oh, yeah, my mum says that as well.
And
yeah,
it's so true.
Yeah. Better out than in. Yeah, it's funny though, isn't it? Like you said, both of our topics are quite niche. Initially, you'd think, oh, who wants to listen to that? And then the more you talk about it, the more you go, like you said, there's a need for people to express this thing that they're not allowed, if it's music or death, whatever it is, it's like people going, oh, I thought no one else cared. And the joy of podcasting is you're like, no, actually, you and quite a lot of other people care.
Yeah.
So who are we remembering today?
My granddad.
Your granddad. And what was his name?
His name was Alexander Bowman.
Oh, that's a great name.
But he got called Eck.
Eck.
Yeah, which is it's quite, because the Alexander went through, like, there was like four generations of Alexander Bowmans.
Yeah,
so everyone had a slight variation on it. So his dad was, his granddad was Alexander. Then he was Eck. My dad is Alexander, but it was Sandy. My brother's Alexander, but he's Alec. So it's kind of, it's hilarious how he's, but he was Granddad Bowman to everybody.
Yeah, Granddad Bowman. Yeah. Oh, that's adorable. Eck.
Yeah.
I've never heard that shortening of Alexander before.
Yeah.
I like it.
Ecky Bowman,
Ecky Bowman.
Yeah.
It really suits the Scottish accent as well.
Yeah, and it so suited him as well. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and he was like doesn't sound as...
Yeah, he was like a third parent to me, really.
Oh, right.
Because my mum and dad... So my mum's from a really big family. Seven daughters, all beginning with E.
Whoa. Yeah. So that's why you're Edith, is it?
No, weirdly, I'm named after my dad's mum.
Oh, just a coincidence.
So, mum grew up in this huge family, and my granddad, my other granddad, was a bit of a kind of... He wasn't an Arthur Daly, that's a really unfair thing to say about him, but he was kind of, he was an entrepreneur is how I would describe him.
Yes.
He was a joiner by trade, but he had a little cafe, then he had a laundrette, then he had a grocer shop.
Fingers pies.
Yeah, and then he had this little minister's manse that he turned into a six-bedroomed B&B that then, over time, became this 50-bedroomed hotel.
Wow.
That we kind of grew up around and involved in.
Yeah.
And because mum and dad worked so much... that my granddad pretty much brought me up.
Wow.
He babysat for me, I mean, all the time. There's a kind of, my mum always talks about, she's still got the Silver Cross pram, you know, one of those old school,
giant
bouncy things.
Yeah.
That he went through two sets of wheel rubbers on, because he walked me so much as a kid.
Oh my God.
And then when
so it's your mum's dad?
This is my dad's dad.
Oh, it's your dad's dad, sorry.
Yeah, my dad's dad. And so he, and then I would spend every weekend at his house, which was the next village along from us. I was from Anstruther. He lived in Pittenweem, which is like a mile along the road. And yeah, my dad would drop me off on a Friday after school, because weekends were the busiest time at the hotel. And then he'd pick me up on a Sunday night. So I'd spend every weekend along there as well.
And was he, Eck, is that correct?
Eck, yeah.
Granddad Bowman.
Granddad Bowman,
I feel bad, so rude. Was Granddad Bowman married? Was his wife around at this time?
So his wife died, giving birth to my aunt when my dad was three.
Oh my goodness me.
So he was in the Navy and he met his wife in my gran, Edith, down in Plymouth. She worked in a department store down there.
Wow, glamorous.
And they got married and they lived down there. They had my dad down there. And then she passed away giving birth to my aunt, Edith.
Oh, wow.
So then he moved back up to Scotland because my granddad also had quite a big family.
Yeah.
They were all up in Pittenweem in that area. So he moved back up with my dad and my aunt and the family kind of helped bring my dad up.
Wow, so, that must have been so hard at that time.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird because he, you know, from listening to your podcast, so many people talk about that generational thing of people not talking about
it. Yeah, yeah.
And my dad and my aunt weren't really allowed to ask about her.
Yeah.
And weren't really allowed, wasn't allowed to, I don't think anyone said to them, you can't talk about
it.
It
wasn't discussed.
It was just that air of, you don't talk about it. And I don't know what it was. I was his first granddaughter, first grandchild. And we formed this incredible bond kind of immediately. And they named me Edith and stuff. So we had this brilliantly open relationship of communicating. And I remember when I first moved down to London and my aunt brought him down.
Oh, wow.
To visit me. And he slept in my bed. It was a tiny little one-bedroom flat. He slept in my bed and we slept on the sofa bed in the living room. And we sat up chatting. And we had quite a kind of brilliantly kind of honest, open chat. And I told her stuff about her mum that she didn't know about.
Whoa.
Because
so he told
being
you.
A kid and being inquisitive and yeah. wanting to know stuff, I would just ask him things about her and he would talk to me about it. So it was amazing wow. to be able to pass that on to my aunt about her mum, who she never met. She was, you know, she was newborn when she died.
Oh, that's so
And my
sad.
Dad as well, you know, he was three. So that was a lovely thing to be able to do.
That's amazing that, I guess, that distance that you provided
yeah.
of not being, like, I'm not having to tell you about your mother.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling you about, oh, what was grandma like?
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of this separate entity
yeah.
and it's a bit easier to talk about. He obviously found it a bit easier to talk. And I guess, like you said, you probably asked direct questions like, where is she?
Yeah.
Like, and what happened?
When I was eight, he had a stroke.
Right.
And so he was told that he would last 6 months. And he lasted, am I 20 years or something?
Oh my God,
yeah, it was
wow.
crazy. He was such a strong character. And he ended up, when he got older and his sister who he lived with passed away, he moved in with mum and dad. So he was in our house,
yeah,
like all the time. And I have this amazing, so when I'd moved to London, you know, I'd go back and he'd be the first person I would want yeah. to see and that I would see. But I sat him down a couple of years before he passed away and filmed him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we just sat and I started off by typing it out as he was talking. And he sat in this rocking chair in my bedroom and we just talked about his earliest memory up till that very day.
Wow.
And I haven't been able to watch it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did he die?
So he passed away 2003.
Okay. Yeah.
On Christmas Eve.
Oh.
And I've got the, so I've got him with me, see, because this yeah. is my necklace and my ring. Or his ashes.
Wow.
So I have the...
Can I see the ring? Is
yeah,
that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Wow.
So it's got a little inscription.
So did someone just put them into a ring?
So my mum actually gave me the necklace as a present. So he was...
Beautiful.
This is another slightly funny kind of kids not understanding, you know, kind of death and all
yeah.
that kind of thing. But he... I remember... I don't know what... I think it must have been around... So my other granddad passed away when I was like... 9, and prior to that I'd lost a little cousin. She was a year older than me. She was 8 and I was 7, all to cancer. And
wow.
so I'd kind of been, I'd had an experience of people yeah, passing yeah. away quite early on. And I remember talking to Grandad Bowman about it and sort of saying about, you know, kind of almost like, well, you're never going to leave me sort of thing. And where are you going to get buried?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, well, I'm not getting buried. I'm going to get cremated. And I was like, A, what's that? And B, how dare you?
Yeah.
Because how am I going to come and say, come and talk to you?
Yeah.
And the reasoning for him wanting to be cremated was because he wanted his ashes scattered with his wife's down
oh.
in Plymouth.
Oh.
And so when he did pass away, we did that. We all went down to Plymouth and scattered his ashes. And we also buried some with his family in Pinweem. And Mum kept some. And so she got this made for me. And then with it, you got like a little pot of extra ash. It's so morbid, but it's brilliant. And so I got this ring made.
Oh, wow.
With it. So, yeah.
And do you wear that every day?
Every day. I mean,
wow.
I wear the necklace every day, not the ring, but I wear the necklace every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does it feel to have that? Like, what do you get from that necklace in a way?
I kind of feel safe.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If that makes sense. Because I think part of me hasn't really dealt with him. I can feel myself welling up thinking about it. I don't think I've dealt with him dying.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge, especially somebody who was with you for so long and such a big part of your life. I think it takes a long time. It's like, funny as well when someone's old your whole life as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, who's like, been and who's had times in your life where you think he's going
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was with him when he died. My aunt and I were with him.
Wow.
He was old and he'd just come to the end.
Mm.
And so we knew he was on his way out. And
was he in Scotland at this
he
point?
He was in Scotland, yeah. And he was in a kind of, he didn't have an illness.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
just old age.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how old he was. I think he was about 90.
Wow.
Or definitely heading towards his 90s. But he was in this kind of, you know, this, not, it wasn't a hospital, it wasn't a hospice, it was, I don't really know what it was. It was lovely and the staff were amazing and he wasn't in there for long, but it was the right place for
yeah.
him to be sort of thing and he wanted to be there. But we went to see him and we kind of knew it was kind of, it was coming. And so we went and got candles and pictures, and I got a CD player and played. He used to sing Al Jolson songs to my dad and stuff when my dad was a kid, and to us. And so I went and got that and had music playing and stuff. And we just sat with him, and he just drifted off.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And I'm so glad that I was there with my aunt as well. Do you know what I mean? It's really important for her, I think, because of, you know, the way that she'd lost her mum.
Yeah, God, that is so hard.
So, yeah, that was amazing. And then I think because it happened at Christmas as well, it was slightly, in our world, Christmas was very different to other people's because we worked on Christmas Day the hotel because we served like Christmas lunch to like 300 people. So even when I was down here and doing telly, I'd still go home and waitress on Christmas Day. You know, it was kind of what was expected of you.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, but that was just, I locked myself away, to be honest.
So that was Christmas Eve 2003. So you just slipped away on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's not many deaths that are that peaceful that I hear about. You know what I mean? That's kind of incredible, isn't it? And it must have been, like you said, so, you must have felt so privileged to have been there.
Yeah, totally. I think that almost kind of helped me deal with the fact that, you know, I knew it was going to be a massive void.
Yeah, yeah.
But being with him when and seeing how peaceful he was and how easy it was for him. And it was his time.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was, you know, he was desperate to get back to her.
That is, like, that is an enduring
love. Because he never had
love.
Another partner or girlfriend never? The whole time. That,
wow.
Which
is quite, I think that is unusual at that time as well.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a sweeping generalisation, but I feel like, you know, the mortality rates were higher and the, you know, you did die younger. And I suppose it was, especially men, I hate to say it, but it's like statistically much more common that men do remarry, just facts.
Yeah.
So that whole time he obviously was completely heartbroken for her.
Yeah.
Oh, that
amazing,
is like
it?
So beautiful.
Yeah.
And had, like when you went to spread those ashes, had your dad and your aunt been back to that?
Yeah,
they
and
had.
we went as kids down there because my gran had a sister called Wynne. So yeah, we used to go down and visit Auntie Wynne and stuff, and kind of visit. My dad would visit his mum's grave.
Wow, so you still had that connection.
Yeah,
down
my granddad didn't go down that much though.
Yeah, it must have been so painful, and especially you said that if he'd never really talked about it, then.
Yeah.
That grief must have been absolutely frozen in time. Of just
It's weird. It's like, you know, and the thing that I didn't ask him was why he didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Was it because people didn't know how to talk to him about it?
Mm.
Or they didn't want to talk to him about it because they didn't want to upset him?
Mm.
Or was it because he asked them not to? You know, it's that thing of like...
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah, because, you know, when you know that someone's passed away that's close to someone, it is a tricky conversation to navigate.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you want to be considerate, you want to be helpful.
Yeah.
But
especially in such tragic circumstances, and he's, you know, left holding the baby, literally.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just of that time, people just were like, oh, well, you have to carry on.
Yeah.
And there was such a focus from what I've gleaned on, bizarrely, it's sort of healthy in some ways, of like just moving forward, which is, in some ways, it's a good attitude, you know, in times of war.
Yeah.
Just keep going forward. But yeah, to not acknowledge the pain that he must have felt, it must have been so. But then I guess he was surrounded by people with deaths and losses and things like that. And you know, mother's mortality was much higher in those days, wasn't it? So I guess people just were like, it's a terrible thing that happened. Okay, let's just move on.
Yeah.
But what I can't, that just that journey, living in Plymouth with, you know, a son and a baby, and then having to take them all back to Scotland.
Yeah.
That must have been so, like, so difficult for him.
Yeah.
Like, now you think about it
with a newborn baby and a three-year-old son.
Yeah.
But I guess it's that family thing, isn't it? Like, he had, three brothers and three sisters.
Wow. So I guess they were like, just come home. Like,
yeah,
we help.
So it was like just everybody, you know, kind of, and his mum and dad were still around as well up there. So everybody was in that kind of area. So, you know, the only reason he was down there was he was posted down there for the Navy,
which
is where he met my gran and then stayed down there. But yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah.
That's so beautiful that that's all he wanted to. So did he talk about, he said always that's what he wanted to happen. So he talked about his own death then.
Yeah. Totally.
In a sort of relaxed way.
Yeah, in a really relaxed way.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really funny. And I don't know whether that's because he had, also because of the stroke that he had when, you know, he was days away from, like, retiring. He was a painter and decorator. and he had the stroke. And he was a healthy man. Mm. And then he had the stroke. And it was months after my brother was born, actually. So I kind of felt for my brother as well, because he didn't get the same experience with granddad that I'd had, sort of thing. But still had a great relationship with him. And yeah, and then he used to do this great thing. So every day, once he was out of hospital and he was home in Pitt and Weem, he would walk to Anstruther along this road from Pitt and Weem to Anstruther. If you're kind of walking from Pitt and Weem to Anstruther, on your left is like this amazing sprawling countryside.
Wow.
And on your right is the Firth of Forth.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's
It's
absolutely stunning. And so he would walk this road, come, you know, rain or shine, and everybody would peep and offer him lifts. He was paralysed on one arm.
Oh,
he could
my
walk,
God.
But one arm, and with his good arm, he'd just wave them on, you know, no, I'm fine kind of thing. And then he'd come along and he would read the papers at my mum and dad's, see us when we got home from school, and then my dad would take him back along in the car for his tea. So he'd do that every, like during the week, he'd do that every day. Just so he was, you know, it was his exercise and it was his fresh air and it was a little routine.
That's incredible.
Like he was amazing.
Yeah, he sounds like that's a real strength, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like a really, really tough, I mean that in the true sense of strength rather than like, you know, he could lift a car. Like, strength, inner strength to be like, this is what I'm going to do to survive this. So then Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Was that just a complete blur to you?
Yeah, I think I just stayed in bed.
Whereas
I would be, you know, we would be working and then opening our presents in the afternoon. And, you know, it was just coming to the realisation that he wasn't there. The presents that we had for him under the tree weren't going to be opened by him. And then making plans for his funeral as well, which in Scotland happens a lot quicker than it does down here.
Yeah.
So
we're quite slow. That's what everyone who's not from England has always said to me, we do it quicker than you do.
And at that time of year as well, it was amazing they managed to kind of get it sorted. Because he was cremated before New Year.
Wow.
Yeah, I went on a bit of a bender after that. My friend Carlin came up from London and kind of came up for the cremation and stuff, and then we drove through in what could only be described as a Parlindeen snowstorm.
Okay,
you know, that
kind
of like from it through to Dundee, and we just went mental for 2 days. Just needed to, like, you know, just kind
of course.
Yeah.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. Did you play music at his funeral?
We didn't choose non-hymn songs at his funeral. How Great Thou Art feels like, God, whenever I hear that song that's been played, I've lost so many family members over the years, particularly to cancer, that feels like it's our kind of family national anthem for death.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, then sings my soul, my saviour, go to thee, how great thou art. And I'm not a religious person, but there's something about that song that's kind of cemented in loss with my family, really.
Yeah.
That's the only one I can remember for the day.
It's weird. They played Jerusalem at my dad's funeral.
Oh, wow. Was that a choice? Or
yeah,
was that...
I think it was something to do with his school or something. It was a hymn he liked, which I didn't know, obviously, because you don't really know what hymn your dad likes at 15. But now I find that quite weird because, you know, like they might play it on like a butter advert and you're like...
But it takes you straight back.
Yeah, it takes you straight back.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And I've talked about this before. The main one I really remember is we played a Frank Zappa song, Peaches and Regalia. Yeah, and that really transports me because it's such a weird piece of music. Whereas Jerusalem will come up at all sorts of times.
Would you ever choose to put Zappa on then to to have a moment?
Yeah, I've chosen to listen to not that song. So I've chosen to, because he really loved Frank Zappa. So I've chosen to listen to I really liked, which is I'm a bad Frank Zappa person, but it was like it's called the commercial album something, and it's all the really cheesy ones. Mm-hmm. So it's like Yellow Snow and. Dancing Fool, I love that one. But Peaches and Regalia, I think I've only ever chosen to listen to about three times. It's come on and I've literally like leapt across the room and like pressed pause on the laptop.
Really? What will it do to you, do you think?
Yeah,
I think... Or is the fear of what it will do to you, do you think?
I think because that track... So like Yellow Snow, obviously, it's like a pop song. Mm. So it's like, oh, Frank Zappa, my dad liked Frank Zappa, then I'm listening to a pop song. And he was a DJ, so he was really into music.
Oh, wow.
So there's lots of songs I could be afraid to listen to.
Yeah.
But because Peaches and Regalia is... If you haven't heard it, listen to it. It's almost classical, you know. It's like so, like dun, dun, like it's got this huge sort of beginning. So I think the music itself is quite emotive anyway, without the memory. So then I hear it, and I think, oh gosh, what's this song? And then I remember being in church, and then I remember like it filling the church, and it. I think it literally feels like overwhelming because it's just, it's almost just too much. It's just like, oh god, like you know, especially if, like you're. You know, just working, your laptop's just playing. You're like, oh, no. It's like somebody saying, do you want to go to church right now? And you're like, no, I'm just like watching telly. Like, what's happening? So, I think, but then I have chosen to list it. And I did this gig, this funny old gig, which is lovely, where three people choose three songs that meant something to them. And they did it at Wilton's Music Hall. Oh, God, One Track Mind. Sorry, I remember the lovely people who run it would be like, please say the name, Karen. I think it's called One Track Mind. All sorts of people, not, you know, it's not comedians, it's like writers and producers and actors and doctors, and they just choose a track that means something to him. And it was at Wilton's Music Hall, and they asked me what track, and I chose that one, which I was like, slightly like, what am I doing to myself?
Yeah.
But I think I wanted to hear it in a big room again.
Yeah.
That's actually what, selfishly, I was like, don't really want to talk about it, but I want to hear it in a big space again. Yeah. So, that music is so powerful.
Yeah, totally. It's like, I mean, that's it was amazing what bringing those CDs and putting like that Al Jolson CD on in that room with him when he was going just did to the whole atmosphere in the room. And also, you know, he wasn't sort of, you know, chatting or anything like that.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, you could almost sense that it kind of calmed him down. I was doing some stuff the other day for Nord of Robins. That's this wonderful music therapy charity. They have centres all around the UK and music therapists that they work with who either work in the centres or they go out to hospitals and work with children, all that kind of stuff. And this mum, Emma, was talking about her little boy, Charlie, who was born with Down syndrome. And then when he was three, he was diagnosed with leukaemia.
Wow.
So he had to spend 6 months in hospital having treatment, and he would just have really, really hard times of being really anxious and agitated and kind of scared. And she said she found that she just kind of grabbed her phone, and for some reason Pavarotti's Greatest Hits came up. She hit play and it just instantly calmed him down. And so from that point on, they knew that music was going to be something that was going to help him, both kind of physically but also just kind of mentally for them as well. It was incredible to sort of hear her talk about that as well. But it's such a provocative thing as well. Because you can choose a piece of music that you know will make you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can torture yourself.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely. Do you ever find yourself, do you listen to Al Jolson since then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes me smile.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it makes me feel. And then weirdly this morning on this bus to school, taking the kids to school, and the four of us were walking to school, which is so nice that we can do that, you know, on rare days where everyone's around. And I was walking up to the bus stop with Rudy, my oldest, and my husband Tom was walking with Spike. And then we got to the bus stop and Spike and I got a seat together and Tom was down the front with Rudy. And Spike just came next to me and started talking about, he said, did you ever meet your great-great-granddad? And I was like, God, where's this? Weirdly, when I was coming here today.
Yeah.
And I was like, I only met one of my great-granddads. And so I was telling him about it. And he's like, did I ever meet any of my... And I was like, no, Rudy met one of his great-grandmas, but not... So anyway, and then he started talking about my granddad. And he wanted to see pictures of HMS Jervis, the boat that he'd been on, and the Navy. And it was just like the most... Kids are so...
And that was and the day as well on your way here.
Morning.
That's funny, isn't it?
So weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was so bizarre.
So I'm insane. So did your... I'm so bad at maths. Did they meet him?
No, they didn't meet him, yeah.
And were you married?
I wasn't with Tom at the time either, so Tom never met him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you feel like that death, obviously it was significant, like, do you feel like, what changed for you? Because, like, obviously after that, you like you say, you become married and you have kids.
Yeah.
Was it linked to that or not at all? Or?
So for a good year after he passed away, because he passed... the Christmas of 2003, we were just going into 2004, and then Tom and I started going out the May of 2005.
Oh wow.
And so but for pretty much a year I just kind of went a bit mental.
It's very common.
And
how did that manifest, like what were you doing? Just going out a lot or?
Going out a lot and not really thinking about myself. Not really thinking well of myself. And I remember I went to see this life coach guy that I'd seen a couple of times that actually my friend Mark had recommended him to me to help deal with just kind of where I was and what I was doing. Yeah. And he wasn't kind of like, you should see this guy. He's like, if you feel like you want to speak to someone, this guy's great. So I went to see him. I saw him once. And then the second time I saw him, which was in a different sort of centre kind of place. It was Tri Yoga, actually, he was in. In Primrose Hill. And I don't even really know what it was that he did, but he had me lying down on a bed and we just talked about a few things. And then he says, okay, just lie down and close your eyes. And he did, I think it was some kind of Reiki thing he was doing on me. But I felt this physical kind of wave of grief.
Wow.
Not, I mean, I don't know if it was grief or what it was, but this kind of wave of emotion that just kind of engulfed me, and I was like uncontrollable, like just sobbing.
Wow.
And I cried a lot when he died.
Yeah.
Like over those next few days and at his funeral and stuff, I found it really hard. And then I almost kind of like tried to sort of, I think I tried to go, okay, I've done that now and I need to, and then I just, I drank loads and I kind of went out loads and didn't stop for a while. And then this kind of experience with this life coach guy, I felt a lot better, and I felt like I needed to take a bit more back, a bit of control again.
Had you been talking about it in that year, or had you been like, no, I'm just having a great time and sort of hiding behind that?
I think just hiding behind that.
Yeah, yeah. And did people ask you particularly, or was the fact that it was your granddad? Because I think sometimes a lot of my guests have said that people are slightly like, oh, that's sad, never mind, because it's like they're old.
Yeah,
they don't.
Yeah.
Sian Harries is a brilliant comedy writer. She came on to talk about her Mam Gi and Gi, which is Welsh for grandma and grandpa. And she said she found it so hard that people just didn't get that they had sort of raised. So they really, it wasn't
My mates knew, you know, hence why my mate Mark was like, you know, go and see someone. And then, you know, my really close girlfriends and stuff kind of were really sort of, you know, like Carlin coming up from London for the funeral. Yeah. She, you know, he kind of knew how important he was to me.
Yeah.
And then it was just a case of, and it was weird. It's like, you know, I got into a relationship that was a silly idea. And so I kind of quickly realised that I needed to get out of that because it wasn't, I was in it for the wrong reasons. But it was, I mean, it's a bit of a blur that kind of year after it, to be honest. And I think going back to your original question of, was I looking for something or whatever? I think once I kind of got my head out the clouds, I kind of like, I guess I had that in the back of my head, like, you know, my mum and dad are still together as well. And they've been, They've been married for 47 years now.
Wow. This is how congratulations to Mrs. and Mrs. Thanks. Yeah. That's amazing.
And they worked together as for a long time. So, and Mum was like, she had, you know, she was engaged at 16, married at sort of 18, had me at 19. And my dad's, you know, like 8 years older than her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this amazing love that my granddad had for his wife, and that lasted, you know, for however many years between her passing until they were reunited, you know. I guess I had that kind of thing of trying to find my one in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't, and I feel like I have, you know, with Tom and I have got, it's really special, and it's hard work at times, and you know, as marriages are and should be, and sort of thing, the best things, if you put the work in, you'll reap the benefits for, I think. So I don't know whether I kind of had that, but it was quite instant, amazingly kind of instant with him, which was kind of came out of the blue, to be honest, but it was kind of like, well, this is kind of weird and different. And, so I don't know if there was an element, but I wish they'd met. My granddad was very funny with a few of my boyfriends that I'd, one particular boyfriend I remember taking up to Scotland to meet him, and he adapted after his stroke. He had this, kind of directness that he'd had sort of, you know, he can no filter kind of thing. It was brilliant and slightly frustrating at times for other people, but I found it hilarious. And so my boyfriend at the time was half Greek. So, you know, he would shave, but then within 6 hours, he would have a bit of, you know, shadow showing. And I remember taking him in to meet my granddad and him going, "Nice to meet you, son. We shave once a day up here." It was like, oh, God.
That's amazing that he became more direct after the stroke. Mm. That's really interesting.
I don't know whether it was some kind of, you know,
some
part of the brain that had been kind of heightened, or some bit of it had been repressed or whatever. Yeah. But it was brilliant. It was very funny.
So, yeah, it must be hard that... It's hard that... I think it is hard when people haven't met people.
Yeah.
But then how do you... Yeah, how have you kept him alive, I guess? So your kids know about him.
Oh, yeah. I've talked about him a lot.
That's nice. I think that's really nice.
Yeah, there's pictures of him around the house. Yeah. And I've shown them, like, old footage of him. Like, I've got, like, old cine films at Christmas time and things and birthdays. I actually started to watch the film.
The interview.
Yeah, with him. Because I want to make a short film about him.
Yeah.
And I know who'll play him. I've got it all in my head. So I have to watch this. I have to watch it to be able to write the screenplay for it, for the short film. And so I got it. It was on a CD, a DVD, and I couldn't get it to play in my computer. So I took it to Snappy Snaps in Hampstead and got them to put it on a USB stick for me.
Oh, amazing.
It's all baby steps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we've all got copies. You know, my aunt's got a copy, my dad's got a copy, my brother's got a copy and stuff. And they've all watched it.
So have you tried to watch it?
So I started watching it, and then I showed Rudy some of it just so he could kind of, I was like, come and see what he was like. And then he had just loads of questions, and then I had to kind of stop. I wasn't in the right frame of mind to sort of sit and watch him, because it's about 2 hours long.
Yeah.
He liked to talk. He was a good talker, and the stuff that he remembered was amazing.
What was his earliest memory?
He remembers things like his dad mending the fishing nets at the harbour in Pitt and Weem, and them all kind of, you know, kind of kicking around at his heels. But it was things that really took my breath away that he remembered, was things like the name of the lady that owned the guest house by the lake where they went to spend their honeymoon in the Lake District.
Wow.
And it was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. What a great detail.
And people's birthdays. It's weird, his memories is, his long-term memory was amazing.
Yeah.
It was his short-term that he'd have problems
it's
with.
Quite often with a stroke, I think, isn't it? Like, yeah, things from, and which is why
they
music.
They were just all locked in there.
Yeah, and why music becomes really powerful, because that's still, you can trigger a memory from like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But when you ask what happened last week, it's like, that's really vague.
Yeah.
So you said, like, because it's interesting, because I wish my maths was better. So how long is it? 2003?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How many
years
is that?
16 years ago.
16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What do you do about the anniversary? Because it's Christmas Eve. Do you sort of, or do you just have a little moment to yourself?
I tend to have a little moment to myself, but I also, I really kind of, you know, I secretly wish my mum and dad were with me every Christmas Eve. Yeah. And they are sometimes. They have been a lot, actually, particularly since I've had kids. Yeah, and what was interesting was that I think it was either the year after or 2 years after he passed away, mum and dad, they sold up from the hotel. And so we suddenly started having these normal family Christmases.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was really nice because then as a family, we could have, you know, a moment for him and just raise a glass to him, really. And I always sort of talk about him on that day to the kids as well. Yeah. It's another way of reminding them about what he would do on Christmas with him, you know. He'd always, so with mum and dad working, what we'd normally do is, and my other grandma and grandma, God bless them, had so many families to go around.
do you know what I mean?
So they'd normally all come round to our house, like after midnight.
Right, wow.
With like friends and stuff. And they'd wake me and my brother up and we'd kind of get up and open presents in the middle of the night sort of thing, and then go back to sleep and then mum and dad would go to work the next morning. But yeah, so it's kind of, I think it's really nice to tell them stories. And the kids seem genuinely interested in family history as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think it's fascinating.
Totally. Like my husband's dad's an only child and his mum is, she's got two sisters and a brother who all emigrated to Australia when she was 18. She was just about to start university. And her mum and dad made the decision to emigrate. And she was kind of like, well, I'm going to stay here because I've just got this great, and I want to. So she stayed and they all went. And what's great is that really we went out to Australia 10 years ago and Tom's grandma, Lucy, was still alive.
Wow.
So Rudy met her, which is great, his great-grandma.
Yeah, yeah.
And his relatives out there and stuff as well. And it's kind of, I think it's, you know, it's lovely to be able to talk about people. And everyone's had lots of different experiences and their stories are fascinating. You know, Tom's mum's parents, you know, they escaped Poland and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of really interesting to make sure that you tell them the kind of stories of their ancestors, I think, as well.
And so it's interesting because you do talk about him a lot and you've got your necklace and, like, he's obviously such a part of your life. But I just found it interesting that you said, like, you still feel like you haven't accepted it. I totally get how those two things can exist.
Yeah.
How do you match those two things in your head?
I think it's almost part of me feels like I don't allow myself to fully close my grief on him because then it's almost me.
Then he's really gone.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I can relate to that, yeah. Because I used to talk about my dad a lot, as obviously I do, and then I've said this on the show before, like it was only last year my therapist was like, you never say he's dead, you say he died. And I was like, what? And she was like, died is quite active in a way and it's sort of like it's not...
It's still ongoing.
It's still ongoing.
Yeah.
And I realised then, I was like, oh, shit. And I thought, God, I found... And when I had to say it, and I've practised now, so I can say my dad is dead, but it still is a little bit like...
Yeah.
Whereas the phrase, oh, my dad died when I was 15, is like... Oh,
but even the way you say it is kind of like you get saying it as quick as you can.
Yeah, as quick as I can. And also it sounds a bit like a character. And it's a bit story-like. Like it, but like my dad is dead is like still 20-ish years later, you know. And I totally understand. It took me ages to go, I would talk about death. I would talk about grief. I would talk about him. Would be fine.
Yeah.
But some part of my brain was like, no. No, I don't want that to completely be finished because then I'm going to have to really look that in the face a bit and be like, oh. And so I've been trying to say, he's dead and deal with it. And it's hard. I can totally see the security maybe is not the right word, but like the sort of comfort of not completely closing the door.
Yeah.
It definitely gives that slight like...
just don't want to forget him.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm going to.
No, and you won't. You won't. And accepting that... isn't, but it's that funny thing that those two things exist completely side by side. So someone can talk to you and be like, oh no, she definitely knows he's dead. Like, you know, she's doing all this stuff. She talks about him and talk about grief and all this stuff. But like inside you're like, but maybe he's not. Maybe I... And did you have that in a way? Because I guess you moved away. So he wasn't always in your life. Do you have sort of in your head like, oh, maybe I can still get that train? And
there's kind of, you know, it's weird, but it is exactly what you're saying. It's like, I know he's not coming back.
Yeah.
He is dead, But there is that kind of thing of, I don't know, it's weird. I'm not obsessed with spirituality and all that kind of thing. But I kind of really appreciate all that stuff, and I really am fascinated by it. Mm. And a really good friend of mine, we used to joke about her being the child whisperer because she used to nanny for us.
Oh, wow.
She's just got something about her that's incredibly calming and spiritual. And so she's retrained and she's learned all these amazing kind of alternative therapies, and she's devising basically her own thing, which incorporates sound therapy, EFT, sound baths, all that kind of stuff. Mm. And so she uses me as a kind of bit of a guinea pig on things, which I love.
Yeah, great.
And so, you know, she sees spirits and all that kind of stuff. And every time that I do something with her, I'm desperate to see him.
Yeah, of course.
I just want to see him. And she's like, you don't have to see him to know that he's there.
Yeah.
And so maybe part of that as well is of not wanting to totally let go is in the hope that I'll have more of him, if that kind of doesn't sound too weird.
No, it doesn't at all. I know exactly what you mean. It's that it's a weird thing that the human mind can do.
Yeah.
Can allow you to have completely logical thoughts and completely illogical thoughts but sit them side by side. And I always had that, like, slightly wanting to see him, but then if anything happened, I'd be like, oh God, please don't. I'd be so terrified. I'd sort of think, oh, that would be amazing. Then if anything, like, banged in the night, I'd be like, oh God, please don't shut yourself to me. I'd absolutely shit myself. Like, that'd be so terrifying. But yeah, I understand obviously each their own, but I've, this process of sort of forcing myself to accept it, which it was definitely what I thought, I need to do this.
Yeah.
And it's been really hard, but it has helped in a way. And it's very sort of, but it is sad because what I've had to see is how far away he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's hard sometimes, especially if you've got married. So I say, weirdly, my husband actually met him. He was friends with my brother. So he actually, weirdly, met him and had a conversation with him. But, you know, obviously didn't know that he would eventually marry this man's daughter. But we didn't, when we got married and when we've had our child, like my dad wasn't around at all. And so I take great comfort in that he did he did know him, but I've had to accept how far I've moved from that person.
Yeah.
And I think that can be things like weddings and, you know, other family members' deaths and children really, really force you to go, oh, they've been dead this much time.
Yeah.
And that can be sometimes, I think, what makes you a bit like, no, I'm still this age and they're still just gone, or they're just there, because it's just comforting, isn't it? It just offers a comfort.
Have you talked to your daughter about him yet?
It hasn't come up yet. She's asked, just said something, because amazingly, I've noticed in books, there tends to be more grandmas than granddads. Mm-hmm. So we haven't confronted it, but she has a Miffy book where Granddad Bun brings Miffy a bear.
Yeah.
And she sort of said, she said something like, where's my granddad? And I just said, he's not here anymore. You know, I've tried to be sort of very honest about it. And then, she did say something the other day that was really terrifying, that she said something like, not this bad, but she said like, oh, well, I saw my granddad or something. Oh, my granddad was in my room. And he said,
wow.
Yeah. And I was like, what?
Oh, wow.
But I tried to be really cool, because also she says things all the time. Like, there was an elephant in my room, mummy. And he told me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're like, you're putting more emphasis on that. But
the hardest question the kids have asked me is, what's heaven like?
Oh, God. What did you say? Lovely.
I think I said something like, it's what you want it to be.
Right, yeah.
It's the place you want it to be, sort of thing. So like for Grandad Bowman, it's him being back with his wife.
Yeah.
And then kind of, you know, continuing where they left off, sort of thing. So I get that was kind of like, because they were like, you know, they were kind of, they could see how sad sometimes it makes me talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm not like I'm sobbing talking about him. I try make it really positive so that they're not scared of death.
Yeah.
Because, you know, When I went through those experiences with my cousin when I was 7, and it was interesting because we went to the church service for Susie, but we weren't allowed at the graveyard.
Wow.
And I can't remember from my granddad, Clark. But yeah, and then I had really weird experiences with, like, one of my best mates at school, she lost her mum when we were 18, just before we left school, actually. And that was kind of really weird. No one really talked. We didn't really know our mum was ill. We knew someone was up, but she wasn't allowed to really talk about it. It was really weird. Because we'd like, we were so close. Like, we went to nursery school together and stuff. And then we kind of went through that sort of phase in our teenage where we kind of found different friendship groups. Yeah, so we kind of slightly drifted apart. And then we, you know, we're still best mates. But we had that weirdly, that period just before mum got ill, we were slightly disconnected. And so it was weird. Like, it was so many kind of rumours about what Mary was going through and stuff. And we didn't really, Audrey and I didn't really talk about it because she didn't really seem like she wanted to. But then my uncle Brian passed away of cancer and my Nana passed away of cancer within like a couple of years of each other. And I don't know, it's because of what I do, you know, I talk for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
Was like, it was put on me to...
start the conversation.
No, to like, at the service.
Oh, yes,
to,
that's like, so common.
Readings and stuff. Yeah. So my uncle Brian, I used to sing quite a lot. I was in bands and... I loved singing, and my Uncle Brian was one of those lovely family members who was like my kind of number one supporter with that sort of thing. And so I remember my Aunt Evie, his wife, phoning me to tell me that he passed away. And he was an amazing man. And she said that one of his wishes was that I would sing at the funeral.
Wow.
I went straight to the off licence and got a bottle of wine. And oh my God. And then my Nana.
What did you sing?
I sang I Know You By Heart, Eva Cassidy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Eva Cassidy.
I know.
That's tough.
Totally.
At a funeral, you're already crying before the first note.
And then my Nana's one as well was like I've got like 21 cousins.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all kind of like, well, Aid, you can speak for us all. I'm like, really? Guys?
I know.
So I had to get up and like do a kind of sort of Nana Clark eulogy based on behalf of 21 of us. It's like fucking hard. Really fucking hard.
Yeah, really hard. And you're not the first guest that's, because if you're in this business, people go, you can do it. I've had to read lots of poems at weddings and funerals. And I've got better because I've done so many, but the first ones definitely weren't good because it's just like, just because you're an actor doesn't mean you know how to read a poem at a funeral. It's quite difficult. But that's quite funny that you've Edith will do it.
She'll do it.
She'll do it.
Bowman will do it.
So you feel, I guess you still feel very connected to him then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any, as I said, I've made a very definite choice to try and not close the door, but like acknowledge I'd left the door open, I think, is what I needed to do. But I don't think there's anything, I don't, it's ever with grief. There's no right or wrong. I just felt like I think I was lying to myself. I think I was like, oh no, door's closed.
Yeah.
And it was like, carry at it. It's definitely still open. So now the door is still a bit open, but at least I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I've got this footage of him and I almost kind of wanted to make this little film.
Yeah.
Which will, I think, will be my kind of,
my
closure, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not on him, but just the acknowledgement that, and I want to do it for my dad.
Yeah.
I really want to do it for my dad. I've talked to my dad about it, but it's so funny watching my dad. Like, my dad is just becoming him as well.
Oh,
it's
really?
Hilarious. Yeah.
That's what's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you see. And that's what I think as well. Again,
just with a bigger belly, but yeah.
But that's like, I find that quite comforting. It's like the dead don't die in a way. Like, they do live on. And I don't, when people say, like, whoever remembers their name, I find that a bit frustrating because I think sometimes it's not about it. Sometimes it's literally someone in front of you and you're like, there they are.
Yeah.
With the memory of that person imbued in their DNA or their personality or...
Yeah, and there's ways that, and I think, like, there's ways that he's kind of, that he's remembered through, like, so Rudy... There's my grand, so this thing with it, this place my granny used to walk along was called the Braes. It's like a Scottish term for like, it's kind of by the seaside sort of hill type thing.
You would need a word for that.
And so we were going to, Rudy was going to be called Bray, was going to be his name, but we've got it as a middle name, so he's Rudy Bray. And so that's kind of my little...
That's lovely.
Part of him is, do you know what I mean? It's like, I find like, I'm not making it in any kind of morbid way. It's just a really nice way of remembering him.
Yeah, yeah.
Of kind of, you know, if Rudy kind of 10 years in time goes, why did you call me Bray again?
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of, there's a reason for it. There's a lovely reason for it.
Yeah.
That's got a connection to someone who was really important in my life.
Yeah, and what a beautiful way to remember him waving cars past him.
Exactly. No, keep going.
Keep going. Yeah. I'm fine. Well, Edie, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
For coming to talk to me about Ek. Am I saying it
Grand
right?
Grand Bowman to everyone.
Grand Bowman. Yeah. Grand Bowman. He sounds like a bloody legend.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, love.
You can follow Edith on Twitter at Edibow, E-D-I-B-O-W, and you can find her podcast Soundtracking on all the usual places. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.